A warm welcome back to Beyond the Norm podcast. This episode is an interview with Sarah Lennon, who is both a coach and facilitator, and it is around the topic of the mental load, or as Sarah also refers to it as the invisible load or the second shift. As a mother, as a daughter, she explains her background and how she has come into this really impactful and meaningful work. You'll hear her passion for the subject, her knowledge of the subject, and also, I suppose, as a non-mother myself, how I share my limited experience of feeling the pressures of a mental load in my life as well. So there's a lot of resonance for both of us on the topic. And we also know this is not just another taboo subject, but a subject that is close to so many people's hearts and guts and minds right now, that we really hope you enjoy it. This episode can also be consumed on YouTube if you wish to watch it on your Google devices or on your home television. I will share the link in the bio here, along with all Sarah's social links, and we also mentioned her Substack email link as well. Hope you really enjoy this episode, and also just find some really useful information and knowledge to help support you if you yourself are struggling and going through a mental load right now. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the episode. Sarah Lennon, what a delight to have you in this very special week for both of us. You were my first podcast guest three years ago. You're already 1 year into your business. I can safely say, and I have tingles as I say it, you have been a huge support and advocate for me. And I don't think either of us would be here without one another. I'm sure both of us would say that. The time was right. We both are holding so much that we want to share with the rest of the world. And I couldn't be so happier to have you in this moment. So very, very warm welcome back to Beyond the Norm podcast.
Thank you. What a welcome, Norma. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it is a huge week for both of us. And I really do. I value this time. So huge thanks to you for making the time for this and for having me on. I'm really excited to get stuck into this.
Super. I want you to introduce yourself in the context of what I suppose we're going to speak on, but also, yeah, where you've come from, because a massive congratulations to you. Your business is 4 years old this week. Your fourth child, or some would say your third child, and then you had your fourth or fifth, actually, in other ways. So a huge congratulations to you. There is loads of people who don't know you, so I would love for you to introduce yourself, please.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Sarah Lennon. I run a business called Story Coach, and it is a facilitation and career change consultancy. So there's three main strands to it. One is I support individuals and teams to create bold new chapters. So this is through for individuals, career change, coaching and strategy. For teams, it's looking at workshops, creating them around reconnection, around ways of working, areas like resilience, psychological safety. And then I also work in the parental support space. So this is where I focus on creating mental load workshops for teams and for different groups as well. And also then return to work supports as well. So I am a mother myself. I have three kids and I have a partner, my husband. And I have a really core belief that in order for us to have equality, or more importantly, equity at work, it has to begin at home. So this is why, I suppose, the center point of what we're going to focus on throughout our conversation today, but also why I do this part of the work that I do.
Super. And I suppose getting the truest sense I know about you and how you and I complement each other. We talk about mother, not mother, and how many of us are mothers, but you are a mother in the truest sense. And I am not. Let's acknowledge that. But I know I have a felt sense of the topic of mental load. Can we start with what's your lived-in experience of this? And even before becoming a mother, because I put you in the context of a modern feminist, I would say, always advocating for women in particular, or for people who are in caring mode. So share a little bit about your lived-in experience, even, I suppose, we'll start with prior to becoming a mother, and then in the context of today as a mother.
So I think I would say that I grew up in a fairly equal household. So I have two brothers. Both my parents worked when I was growing up as well, which, you know, was I probably am just at the cusp of that generation when it started to become more normal. And for me, you know, I think the mental load probably wasn't even a topic that I would have considered prior to having kids a huge amount. I think the idea of, although I saw in my household, say, you know, it's only upon, I suppose, hindsight and reflection that you get to see where it actually was infringing on different areas. But for us, you know, we had two present parents. My dad worked a lot more than my mom. And my mom had to manage three kids a good bit on her own when we were young as well. So she definitely had to deal with a lot of it. And I think I've had many conversations with her over the years around this area, because I think it's one that it's like essentially it's described time and time again as the invisible load. And although the topic itself is becoming more spoken about now, thankfully, it perhaps wasn't always that way. So for me, my lived experience was probably being very unconscious to it. I didn't realize how much was involved and how much was going on in the background until I started to, yes, have kids myself, but also then started to work a lot with different women, primarily in the coaching practice that I work in. So I got to see it come through time and time again as a theme in coaching, which that was what instigated my interest in it, as well as, say, working in the tech corporate world. You get to see, you know, certain things happening at a particular point in people's careers as well, or a particular age demographic. So for me, that's where I come to it from, is really not knowing and then becoming aware and then educating myself further on it, because for me it's incredibly important.
You've talked about a journey there, really, of the not knowing to knowing to educating, and you and I share so much in common, but we both have a real thirst for learning, and especially on, we don't learn always the same things. Sometimes they collide, sometimes they don't. And one of the things is when we really have energy around a topic, that there's a real thirst for the knowledge, because you didn't know to knowing, and there's like an awakening nearly in the, oh my God, I didn't realize that. And I'm putting you in a personal position, but the ages of your children are important here, the stage in the life that you're at. So just, and you share it as you would wish, but yeah, the ages of your children as they are today.
Yeah, so I have two girls and a boy. My oldest daughter is 9. My middle daughter is 5 and a half, which is very important. And my youngest little man, he is 20 months. So just over the 1 and a half cusp into the fun time of toddler years. So I'm right in the throes of the busy, intense, from one perspective, intense
yeah,
side
the
of
juggle.
It.
Yeah. And I think that's important for people to, I suppose, build that credible trust in your own load and your own and balance right now. For those who are unfamiliar with the term mental load, Or the second shift, I've heard you refer to it as well. Can you give some wording around it just to help people get a sense of it? So we're bringing them into the some possibly people into the not knowing into the knowing phase. What would you, yeah, how would you articulate that?
Yeah, so essentially the mental load is a description of three categories, right? So on one category is the cognitive labor that's involved in managing a household and a family. So this is where you talk about, say, meal planning, play dates, activities, shopping, things like that, the practical elements to running a household. And the other side is the emotional labor. So this is where essentially, where you're managing the emotions of your family or of the household as well. So, say you have a child settling into creche, you say you have a kid acting up in school, say something's going on with one of your kids, it's managing those emotions or with your partner in the household as well. And the mental load essentially depicts the intersection of those two categories, those overlapping categories. So, what it does is the mental load covers the practical elements and the emotional elements, emotional labor in managing and running a household and a family. That's where the mental load comes in.
That is so helpful for me even, and I've learned so much because of you, but that some people's mental load could be, you know, in a partnership, they feel really heavy on the emotional load, but the other partner does a lot of the practical. And I definitely know examples of that in my families and my parent, you know, friends groups, and also my own lived-in experience. And I suppose to balance that, I will represent the single side of the coin here. And my when Sarah spoke about this, I went, oh my God, okay, my lived-in sense of this was, and I will say in a past tense, I don't have it right now, is when my mother was initially sick and then moved into, I suppose, an active dying phase, and I was running two households. So my own, which my own needs are my own. I think people think when if you're not single, we still have to wash clothes and we still have to cook and we still have to do all the jobs that a family has to be done for ourselves, which is not selfish, it's just necessary. But I was also doing that at the same time as running my parents' household. And that came with its own challenges because I was parenting my parents. And I'll call that out. Hindsight is a great thing, but I definitely was stepping into that role. And the shopping, the emotional load, the practicalities, the cleaning, the caring for somebody who's really sick, and not time for anything else other than those dual tasks. So losing yourself, who am I in this? Who am I when my role is on a Sunday morning to go and do the family shop when I'm emotionally afraid and scared my mother's dying? You know, there's so much going on at that same time that I only did that for a very brief period of time. I'm going to acknowledge that 16 months in total from the time of sickness to the time of death. And let me tell you, I was a, and Sarah knows this anyway, for the listeners, I was a shadow of my former self. It was a photograph taken around 5 weeks before my mother died, and I am unrecognizable to who I am today. If you were that person, and this is the question to you, over a period of a lifetime, it could be 5 years, 10 years, whatever, have you seen the impact of that lived-in mental load? And I want to use the word scary. What does that look like, feel like, sound like when it's to an extreme?
It's essentially like losing yourself, right? So you become a shadow of who you were, because it's like you're essentially managing everyone else's plans, everyone else's all the practicalities. And regardless of whether it's a family unit or whether it's a partnership or whether it's you're caring for your elderly parents or caring for other relatives, you become a shadow, rather than being yourself as well, because you're managing everything else, everyone else's emotions, everyone else's baggage. But like you say there, it's your responsibility to manage yourself, right? In that when you were managing the two households. But when you don't know how to do that, number one, or even have the awareness around what that entails or prioritization from that side, it can become, you know, one analogy that comes up consistently in coaching sessions would be, you know, you can't see the wood from the trees. You don't even know where to start. And it becomes like that analysis paralysis of overwhelm of choices as well, when you're thinking about how to re-engage or how to re-establish or become more familiar with yourself. Mm. So that's what I would see, is a shadow is the one word that would come mm. to mind. And that's what I would see consistently, particularly with, say, work like dual career couples, right? So I would work with a lot of the time I would specialize, say, working with women. So they could be part of a dual career partnership where both partners in the relationship. And I suppose here, like with the mental load, a lot of the research done is around heterosexual couples. So just to bear that in mind as well. But it's with dual career couples, like what can happen to the person bearing the mental load in that partnership over the course of time. It's shadow still coming back.
I even get the sense you're holding back, Sarah.
Well, it's like, you know.
It's like, I suppose I'm poking a bear to like paint the worst case scenario, and you're being really kind with it. And but this, when you speak, I hear just like more than shadow, like a total darkness. But yet when they come to you, there's some light peering in because they know they need help. They don't know how or why. They mightn't have the label on it. They might have a desire to change their career. You know, there's a propelling action that has started to happen by the time they reach you, that it's like the line in the sand is before that. It's like such a darkness that somebody has said, well, you're not yourself anymore. You know, who are you now? Who am I now? Sometimes it takes an additional crisis on top of that to really propel that forward. And I know somebody I heard recently speak on grief is such a propeller to change, because it takes something to end and die for you to go, okay, that's it now. And it doesn't need to be an actual death. Can I just call that out? It can be the end to something. It could be the last child. And I see it amongst a group of peers about to sit their leaving cert. And they're like, okay, who the fuck am I now? Because I don't have to go to the parent teacher meetings, and I don't have to go to, you know, the luncheons for parents. Who am I becoming? So the grief and the ending is the start of a new beginning. So it's like, propel that back to that parent in the middle of junior cert cycle, maybe starting secondary school, or, you know, from going from creche to, you know, Montessori, into all those endings and beginnings where a child starts, you know, out of nappies. Like each has an ending and a new beginning, that there's this, you know, Viktor Frankl's thing, like space in between, to go, okay, who am I now? Who am I becoming now? And a chance to pause and reflect. And the sad part of the reality this area, you and I know, is society is like, next, no time for pausing. It's like, you know, when you get married, when are you having the children? And after the first child, when are you having the second child? When are you having the third child? You know, it's this societal need for what the fuck is next, as opposed to who am I in the now before the next? So it feels like you have that liberty of meeting people as the chink of light just comes in. Even though they don't know why or how, and they've shown up in your virtual room. I'll pause there for you to share your thoughts on what I said there.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think I would add on to that as well. It can be with some of the teams and the groups that I've run, these workshops around this topic of the mental load, it's for similar but different reasons, you know. So sometimes they're focusing on how can they retain people within their team, within the workforce? How can they practice well-being in its truest sense, not just the kind of top level stuff,
the box.
Really dig into, really dig into, okay, what does this look like? And this is where ways of working comes in from that side with a team as well. But I do think, you know, when working with people one-to-one, say from a coaching capacity or in that side of it, you know, it's a privilege to be able to support people through navigating those waters, because like you said, there can tend to be like a pivotal point or some sort of event, and whether it is grief, whether it is something else that has come to an end, that has begun, whether it's a identity shift or change because of a new baby, or everything comes into it. They're all pivot points. But I think it's, you know, acknowledging that does play a part for you, and really coming back to almost getting to know yourself again is part of that process as well. But it works with both sides, because we're not separate selves, you know. We're not like Norma in work and then Norma at home, you know. You are who you are, and that's something that I think we're becoming more aware of from a societal perspective, but a bit of a way to go.
And that's the stance that I have in my work, is we start as whole. We might feel fragmented, and how do we bring all those parts of ourselves and aspects of ourselves and love and accept ourselves as the messy whole, or, you know, and that sense of the bigger picture. I had asked the question around the impact on the individual, and because you have that beautiful dual aspect to your work and you started to talk about it there, what's the impact to businesses if 80% of their employees are made up of people who have the predominant mental load in their other systems? What is the impact, and any data or anything you have to offer around that, because you have such wisdom?
Yeah, not like there's a huge amount of work being done and have that's already been being complete in this area. Like, and say there's an Irish organization that released a stat last year that 85% of women will leave full-time work within 3 years of having their first child. And you know, you've got the other side of it, is that another stat, the same organization, they ran a survey, and 95% of working parents felt overwhelmed in the past month. You know, 95%, you know. So
that's far, like, I don't know, who are the 5%? Who are those 5%, Sarah?
I would like to know that
what's
too.
Going on?
But if,
that is huge, yeah. That's stark.
Yeah. And so to think that, say, those stats don't affect business performance, business productivity, or team cohesion, team connection, is completely remiss, right? Because it absolutely affects how a team works, but on which then has that ripple effect of impacting on a business. So I think it's I could shout out stats till the cows come home around the mental load, and what, like, say there's great surveys done by Deloitte Women at Work, McKinsey's and Women in the Workplace report really hones in on that broken rung. But these are, when it comes to the mental load, like there's a great European centric study that's around the European quality of life, and it was run across 37,000 people across Europe. And what they found was that, like, say in Ireland, I'll use an Irish specific stat because it's always nice to get them when they're local as well, is like women would tend to do 20 hours of housework a week versus 7 hours a week per men. Right? And that, and the male average is lower than our European counterparts as well. So it's that I found, that whole survey or that piece of research came out of a book that was written by an excellent Irish author called Paula Fiennes. She wrote a book called The Invisible Job, which hones in on this mental load. And I think it's you know, it's that to be able to create that connection for businesses to see that when people are impacted by the mental load at home, that it absolutely impacts their own interactions at work and their performance and everything from that side as well. So it's if we can create that bridge there of understanding, of driving awareness, but also seeing that there's no one size fits all. Okay, so let's, you know, from that side too. But it's the only way that change will come is to acknowledge and be aware of it first.
Yeah, the truest form of two coaches talking to each other, we're already moving forward. I had this scenario play out in my head, and you jump in where it feels appropriate, of, and I'm going to call it out, when you said one of the stats there, I can hear a listener shouting at the podcast going, no shit, Sherlock, it's the women versus the men. But it's not always true, right? And we're going to, you know, it's the balance there. But I had this, I saw this woman, and there's no name or anyone in particular. I just like the sense of this woman showing up to work. She's had a crazy morning, getting kids out to school, getting out to creche, thinking of lunches. Maybe one child is not feeling emotionally secure to go to work. There she arrives into a meeting, and the company themselves have an unfair balance of exchange. That's what I'm going to call it out as. And they are very demanding of that same woman. And there is a volunteering session coming up that week, and there's also a night out next week, and that same woman could have elderly parents that she checks in on the shopping, and the manager who has less of a mental load, in my stereotypical brain, is played out as a male manager who is wondering why productivity is down in the last 2 weeks, maybe a child was sick last week. And why can't they attend the volunteering, or why can't they come to the night out, you know, the following week? And that sense of, you're not part of this team, you don't take this team seriously. Do you care about your job when that job is such a light when it's light, but it's such another demand onto the person, but also the lack of clarity or understanding from the manager of what that person is holding. And that's a scenario. You know, I've come across it in my client work as well. And the impact to the business and the individual, it's both. But the frustration for the two individuals in that story are really intense frustrations, and turns into anger. And you don't understand me and I don't understand you. It's on both sides, you know. So that was something, as you were telling that, I had that picture of that woman carrying so much, and that, like, when the fuck is this going to end? Like, like, what can I do about this? Where can I seek help? How can I rebalance everything here? So yeah, that was the picture you created in my mind when you spoke.
So so clearly, vividly, I can see it, but. What I would say, like, is that, you know, there's another author who focuses in on the mental load, Eve Rodsky. She's based in the US, and her book's called Fair Play. And she has this question, which I think is really pertinent right now, is it an ambition gap or is it an exhaustion gap? You know, when we think about everyone, when we're talking about, like, retaining and elevating female participation in the workforce at senior and C-level and going up and positions as well. And I think that's the piece here. But the other side, and I completely get about the scenario that you've just played through, but the other side of it is, like, you know, it's stereotypes come into play here as well when it comes from the male side. Yeah, so, like, you've got people like, you know, and we're from a cartoon perspective that you're constantly seeing in the media. So, like, I've used an example on my LinkedIn recently around Homer Simpson, or that Peter from Family Guy, or even Daddy Pig from Peppa Pig. I'm still in all of these phases with my kids. And like, I was male role models. So, you know, kind of lazy, incompetent people who need to be almost shown what to do, when in reality, for the majority of dads, that's just not the case. You know, there's onesies out there that say head goes here, arm here, leg here, and you just Nobody needs that, because all it does is it's pushing on that stereotype that men are capable when they are perfectly capable. Like, and a good cartoon that's demonstrating that the opposite is Bluey, which is like another, it's an Australian based cartoon, and the dad is, his name's Bandit, he's really involved with his kids, and he would be like seen within the show, or he's depicted as the primary carer, you know. So he's there, and he would, I wouldn't say like they seem to have quite a strong partnership between him and his dog wife, but he's definitely a very present father, and it's just a really good, this is what we need more of as well, because I think we have to be, when navigating through these types of waters where it is like the mental load is a tempestuous topic, you know, sometimes it gets people's back up, because they're like, well, you know, if I do what I always do it wrong, or you know, it's like, if you tell me what to do, I can do it, you know, or it's, and that aspect of, you know, it's called the invisible load for a reason, because sometimes people don't even see what's there to do, you know, unless you bring attention to it. So I think we need to be like, this is where that growth mindset comes in, about having those conversations and being willing to see that perhaps the way we have been doing things isn't working for everyone, and how can we change that as well, and not come into it with like that defensive backup approach, but rather think about it from the other side of the coin. Okay, yeah, is anything that they said there true, you know, and really think about it from that side, because the stereotypes play into this too. Massive. And I think it's, yeah,
assumptions, it's you know, we'll always out, make an ass out of me and you, and and that's what this conversation is certainly not. That it's not adding fuel to a fire. If anything, it's like the balance of fire and water in general, and it's somewhere in between, because there is power in the acknowledgement, but I get that sense of the person would share if they felt safe to do so. And you talk about psychological safety as another area that you work on, that a fear of speaking up, that they're making the invisible visible, needs to be in a safe space, or else there's a cost. There's a cost in showing up as visible. And yeah, I suppose I'd love to see the, and getting into that now, into that real true coaching, the impact of your work when the invisible becomes visible, whether it's in those group sessions that you do, or over time with a one-to-one, what happens? What's the first phase? And there's lots of, I'm sure, different phases. You often speak as well about the messy middle as well. That's definitely an area that you talk about. So yeah, talk us through that, Sarah.
I think like the first port of call with this is around the awareness piece, you know. So it's that you actually used a good, when you were talking through your, what you pictured there around the analogy of a team. So often we use teams for business and for sport, but we don't for home, when in reality, in order for a household, so whatever household you're set up in, to work cohesively, you know, that mentality of thinking as a team, there is no I, but we work collectively together. And that's really a fundamental point of looking at the mental load. So everyone plays their part. So to go back to what you said, when the manager had that kind of misalignment with his expectations versus the employees, what performance, what was going on there. It's when everyone plays their part in a team, things work. And when people start to drop
balance
off,
of exchange, I heard that. There's like my stance of systemic work, it's like that the system, when it's in a teamwork mode, it's a shared mode. There's balance of exchange, there's balance of responsibility. And we all can't be at our best all the time. So somebody needs to, when we're lower, that there's somebody there to rebalance us, and vice versa, that there's always that dynamic, and that can change every hour, every day. And an allowance in a team, not everyone's going to have their best performance every day. But somebody will shine on a given day and somebody else won't. So how do you create those environments if the other person doesn't see it as that? Or
Yeah, but this is where like Brené Brown actually uses a great example of like levels that she talks about with her husband. So she might come in after a hard day and she'll say to him, "I'm at a 30. Where are you at today?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm at a 60, so I can cover for you when it comes to, you know, the load piece." They don't mention the load, I will say that, but like this is what kind of alluding to. And then other days, it's she could be at 70 and he's at 20, so she covers him. So really in a partnership, it's about what's fair and not what's equal. And that's kind of like sometimes what it's a shared view of what is fair for you. So for what might work for my partnership might not work for someone else's, and vice versa. So it's what's fair is not always equal, and what's equal is not always fair. So it's not about being a 50-50 split. And I think that's something that we kind of have hatched onto in a way from societal, like we need to be equal. And it's not about that. It's about like knowing that one size doesn't fit all and coming in with that fairness, that balance there. But it's balance that you choose, that you create. And if someone, it's like with having those, the conversation, you know, or even addressing and trying to introduce that topic into your relationship, it's, you know, I would say it takes three things, right? Courage, communication, and clarity. But and you need to be really mindful of time and tact, right? So the time to do it is not when you're all trying to get out the door in the morning and you're late for creche and someone's forgotten their ukulele for school and all, and you're like, well, this is what I'm talking. That's not, you know, that nobody's going to win in that exchange there. And it's not about that, but it's looking at for, you know, so thinking about when is a time where you're both, if you're in a partnership where you're both in that place. So it could be an evening time when everyone's in bed and you have an hour or two to sit down and say, listen, here's what I've noticed. And it's really like having the tact around it. So whatever side that you're on in terms of within the relationship, it's really about preparing for that conversation. And actually Paula Fiennes has an invisible job description on her website, which is really well like worth taking a look at if you are looking at this area of the mental load, because it goes through all of the tasks or everything that's covered within. And it's not saying that you need to like list out all 5 pages out of it, but it's rather to look at, okay, what's really important to me to get out of this, where it's going to be an equal exchange or a fair exchange of what I'm looking for from a kind of rebalancing that mental load, and not necessarily thinking that by tomorrow that it's going to be in that perfect place either, but by starting that process, creating the awareness of what it is, of what's involved in it, that's, you know, you're starting from the best point there and then moving forward with it.
And I get that real sense of, you know, fairness versus equality. That's really, really strong. My curiosity went to a place around single parents or parents that are separating, divorced, where they're not cohabiting, but they're sharing the parent load. Give us the three things again, because I think they're important, because it feels like they're still really relevant. Communication.
Courage.
Courage, communication, and clarity.
Clarity.
Yeah. Anything that you would add to that in particular for parents that are co-parenting but not living together, and also maybe parents who not by choice are totally single, or they find themselves in that scenario?
The co-parenting, like this is like the co-parenting, I think it reminds me of that, or what comes to mind is that Stephen Covey principle of like begin with the end in mind. So thinking about what it is, and that's, it's not easy territory to navigate, you know, from a relationship standpoint. So what is it that you want? What experience do you want to have? Do you want your kids to have? And then looking at, you know, that the non-negotiable piece as well. But I think for for solo parents or for single parents, like the hidden heroes, absolutely. The mental load is, it's, I think from that side, it's really about prioritizing what is really important and what's not necessary in different time, in different cycles as well. Like, so it's a little bit, if you don't have someone or a cohort to share that load with, and you're taking it all on yourself, it comes back to what you actually said at the beginning of this conversation, which is around where taking care of your sense of self, taking care of what do you need to do to make sure that you balance
don't
the load
lost.
With you.
Yeah, it's an internal balancing, and it's we all need help, guidance, and other people to be useful to us in those scenarios. And I think that was one facet where I totally lost myself, and I was the queen of self-care prior to that. Because it was an emergency situation, it was it was a matter of life and death, and that it felt all my values and my philosophies went out the window because I didn't know how long it would go on for. And certainly, Sarah and I also share, I've managed to get Sarah into ice baths, and she knows how, you know, finding the Wim Hof, you know, that was the start of me returning to self. And it's obviously, I'm not in the ice every day. I am going for a swim after this session. that the sea has always been a place where I feel held. I get a sense of self, and my thoughts merge with my feelings, because sometimes they're very separate things, and like they have that chance to kind of come together, and I feel whole in that. But it's everyone finding their own thing, when whether they're on their own as a carer, where there is, and I also get that sense of the office manager that cares so deeply for their children workers, you know, that like that sense of that, you know, that person that really keeps everyone together. And the moment they retire, that they don't know who they are, their identity has always been caring for the other. Because I feel there's a huge topic around that, and the mental load around those individuals in workplaces that are the turnkey to everything, but they and some cases it's a very conscious thing, and that's what they want, being in service of the other. And you and I understand that from the nature of our work. But how to attend to ourselves in those moments where the balance is flipped and it becomes subconscious, that our way of being is always rescue and our way of being is always helping, whether that's through practical or emotional territories, that something around, if you're aware of it and it's a conscious decision, that, you know, there's limitations. But if you feel boundless energy, knock yourself out, you know, it's like, it's go where the energy is, that I often speak about. Yeah.
And it's interesting that you say that, because I think it's the right now, in particular, say for HR teams, if you have been through like the world of work right now in terms of turbulence, etc. And for HR teams, a lot of the mental load would weigh on them. You know, they're dealing with not only, say, potential layoffs from that side, but also, you know, internally things that it could be going on from an employee experience or well-being side of it as well. And it's very much, there's a huge weight from that side as well. So it's you're right, as in, you know, that can be, whether it's spoken or unspoken, it can be part of people's roles, but it's looking at then, okay, so being aware of that and consciously saying, okay, so what are the tools or practices that I'm going to incorporate that's going to enable me then to, like, you know, if you're carrying the mental load at home and then you're coming into work and you're also carrying it there, that's a lot of load on your shoulders, right? So it's you know, being aware and looking at what can you do, and not in a basic way, but it's really integral to think about, okay, what makes me well, or what is well-being to me, and doing those things and making sure that, you know, as much as is possible, they are non-negotiables within your life.
Amazing. What is well-being? It's such a powerful question. I have a last question for you, that is very particular to you. So I want to give space for anything else on this topic before we move into that last question. What else would you like to share?
Oh, what else would I like to share? I think it's for me, right? The mental load is a huge area of focus for 2024 because I think I have a real passion for creating an equitable workforce, and this underpins it. So this is where I plan to spend and share and shout a lot more around this area. So if you are interested in it, and if you want to learn more and have a conversation, or if you want to just learn more about it, I'm happy to share any and all resources. But also, follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram,
I will share
on
all your handles on this
my
episode, so
website. Yeah.
we'll cover them off.
Yeah.
My question is a future statement,
Okay.
and it is Sarah Lennon in 3 years, because now that we're 3 years fast forward to our first conversation and we're sitting down again and we're honoring our fabulous friendship, and I'd say one thing that has always kept our friendship alive is that we both admire each other greatly. And it's 3 years down the line, your children a little bit older, your business, your fourth baby's also growing up. Where are you now, and what has been the impact of your work?
Oh, Norma. Where am I now? I really believe in the work that I'm doing right now and in the work, and I feel like I'm only on the cusp of growing it, and not in a scale it to be a hustler type of way, but in a scale it for impact in that way. So for me, it would still revolve around Story Coach and spreading the awareness and I probably should have like a solid stat that I'd like to reach in terms of like by meet with 50 organizations
It's a
or
felt
etc.
sense. I think it's more
Yeah.
felt sense. Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like it's I think what would be success from that side for me would be that these are topics that are not kind of sneered on or just kind of let go, that they're really embraced as part of our whole work-life integration and the way we bring ourselves to work every day. So that's what I would see in 3 years, and still doing a mix or that blend for me of the workshop facilitations that I or the workshops I currently facilitate, and then also doing that one-to-one coaching work, because I think it took me a while, but I got to a place last year where I was like, yeah, this is a good blend. So yeah, that's I'm obviously still in touch and engaging with you. That just comes as natural.
Sarah and I have an ambition that we will work together, and we're now putting that out there to the universe, because I feel we complement each other beautifully, from so many different perspectives. We are each other's yin and yang, and yang and yin, depending on who needs it of a given day. Sarah, I have one thing to say. I hope your dreams do not come true, because they're too small.
Thank you.
Because I think that the profound impact of your work, you, I have a feeling that this can go much bigger, and the impact of your words and your wisdom and your lived-in experience, and your children's lived-in experience of being in a household where there's equity, and what those three children will go on to do. I think you are, as you said, you're only touching it now, so you can't even get a sense of it, but let me tell you, I get a sense of you, and it's a bigger stage, than and way bigger arena than where you're playing in now. And you'll know this, for those who follow Sarah on LinkedIn, when she writes, her words go viral. She doesn't have to say a lot, but when she does, it goes big. What Sarah also hasn't said is she started a Substack email channel.
Yes.
Please follow. Her words are fabulous and they really land and resonate with so many. Sarah holds such a resonance for people who can't articulate what they're feeling. So I'd really encourage you to support her in whatever way that means to you, a like, a follow, a share. And if you're called to speak to her, please, her openness and her warmth is a joy to be around. And as such, I'm nearly going to get emotional. Such a great friend. And Sarah's always been a part of my story of becoming a coach. And I don't know what time of year it was when we sat down for that first coffee, but I have a feeling it might be this time of year. It certainly was a springtime, I think. And it culminated me ended up becoming a trained coach. I probably had a natural sense of being a coach by then, but I certainly didn't have the academic. And Sarah was such a turnkey to my story. So I really hope that is for you as well. So thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. You know what you reminded me though is that when I was writing a post or writing my Substack email yesterday, and I'm 4 years old this week, my business is.
Boop,
and
boop.
But I also realized that I completed my coaching qualification, my first one. I've done a few now, but my first one back in June 2014. So I'm 10 years
Wow.
Coach qualified this year. And I was pregnant with my first child at the time. So yes, like it's a lot of giving births, a lot of
new beginnings, and rightly so that we did this in a special week for us both. You are officially my 34th episode, and I think my 14th guest as well, so there's power in the numbers. I am starting a new tradition in 2024 where you leave a question for my next guest, something that the Diary of the CEO podcast does, and I love it because it means there's a link to our ending and the beginning. And the next person I'm interviewing is a human design coach, which Sarah and I have a particularly fondness for because we're the same person. What would your question be? And it doesn't need to be on human design, but what would be your question for my next guest?
If they had three lessons to share with your listeners, what would they be and why?
Fabulous. I love it. I look forward to hearing her reply. Sarah, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I will stop the recording there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A very special thank you to Sarah, firstly, for her time, and to you for listening to this podcast episode. For those that are interested in listening to other back catalogue of kind of taboo subjects and different subjects, there is plenty more within this podcast to keep listening to. So subscribe if you would like to hear more. Also, for those that don't know, and perhaps know Sarah but not me, I'm also a coach, trained in a similar way to Sarah, would have left corporate life behind me and started my business in the last 8 months or so, but I've been coaching for 6 years, both individual and team coaching, and I specialize as a systemic coach. So I look at your system and all the systems you have belonged in and are currently in, and help you restore some balance to yourself and get clarity in your life. So give me a follow on Instagram at Norma O'Kelly or Norma O'Kelly on LinkedIn. Sarah's information is going to be in the show notes here as well, including her link to her latest Substack as well, which I'd really encourage you to sign up. Sarah's way of writing, as I said in the podcast, is truly special and unique. So please give her a follow. She would be really, really grateful. And also, if you really like this podcast, be sure to rate and review, like, share with your friends or anyone you know that would benefit from hearing about this subject in particular, the mental load. If you are listening to this episode before International Women's Day, Sarah and I plan on having a LinkedIn live event. If you follow either of us on LinkedIn, you will get all the details for that event, and we will be discussing this topic again, mental load, in more detail. And if anyone has any questions that they would like to send or DM us on social or any of the links below, please do so. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again, and have a great rest of your week. Take care.